What's up, Bulls fans? This is Victor Martinez, proud USF Bulls fan and head baseball coach at Leonard High School in the Tampa Bay area. And you're listening to this Bruin podcast. Go Bulls.
You have to understand those who came before you. You can't just play for me.
Payoff pitch. Brutcher pulls it. Deep to right field. And this game is tied.
Every day is to make the university extremely proud. To make our alumni extremely proud of what we're doing in the program. Culture and work ethic and all of those things. Those are living, breathing things.
Are you kidding me?
This is ripped, the first Hogan, and there is your game winner. The South Florida Bulls can celebrate. They are headed to the Super Regionals for the first time in school history.
If you don't have the expectation of getting to Omaha, and playing well in Omaha, you probably shouldn't be coaching Division I baseball.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of It's Bruin at McEwen, a USF baseball podcast, bringing you some fun off-season content here. Today, I've got a very special guest. His name is Jeff Davis. He played at USF baseball from 1972 to 1973, where he was a catcher. He then became an assistant coach with USF from 1974 until 1982. And during that time, he was working under USF's original baseball coach, Beefy Wright. And he was also an assistant coach under Jack Butterfield, the second coach in USF history, and Robin Roberts, the Major League Baseball Hall of Famer and third USF baseball coach in history. He then became an associate athletic director at USF from 1983 until 1989. He actually had a one-year stint in there as the head athletic director of USF, and then ended up finishing his career working at St. Pete Community College. He was also an athletic director and associate provost there, and he remains a very devoted supporter to his alma mater, the USF Bulls. I actually first met Jeff at one of the tailgates we had a couple years ago when the program was honoring the baseball team from, I forget which year, but they were doing like an alumni event, and I remember meeting you there. And then I also saw you at the Coach Mitch Hanna's press conference, and it was great to catch up with you there. And I was like, you know, I think Jeff's got a lot of good stories from his time, and it'd be fun to bring that to the program. So Jeff, thank you for joining me today, and how are you doing?
Well, Mark, thanks. First of all, I want to thank you because I know you put in a lot of volunteer work with this podcast, with this production, and I know you've been doing it the last couple years, and I can just imagine the hours that you put in behind the scenes. And I really want to just thank you. And I'm glad you brought that up about our first meeting. I was at the alumni game. I was with another alumni player. He had just flown in from Indiana, and we're walking across the parking lot to come into the stadium. And all of a sudden we look over and there is a gigantic tailgate. Now we both look at each other and say, wait a minute, are we going into a football game? Because I'm not used to seeing big tailgates at a USF baseball game. So obviously we walk over, we meet and greet you, and you share a little bit about what you just had indicated, and just interesting. And again, I just thank you because I know the work you put in, and obviously this is a great advertisement tool for not only specifically USF baseball, but in general, USF athletics. So, Mark, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. I really, really appreciate that. Really appreciate that. Yeah, that was a fun time. I mean, yeah, meeting you there and being at that game, and yeah, I was glad we were able to catch up again just a couple months ago. And just curious, you know, you had a long career in coaching and in academia, and you know, have you retired from that? And if so, you know, how is that going? You know, what are you up to these days?
Well, retirement wise, as a public service announcement, I've got to confess, I'm going to be 73 years old next month.
Okay.
My wife and I, Janice, we're going to be celebrating our 50th anniversary in a couple months.
Wow, congrats.
So obviously, my retirement centers around a lot of family stuff.
Nice.
We've got 7 grandchildren from ages 16 down to 1. So obviously, we spend a lot of time with them babysitting,
definitely,
taking them back and forth to school. But in terms of other things I'm involved with, you know, being an old guy, one of the greatest parts is that you can get into gyms free membership. I belong to 3 different gyms with my silver sneaker card. So obviously I work out, try to put 5-6 days a week. But from a USF standpoint, I've got a couple groups that we remain in contact with. I got a group of about 25 guys who are ex-players from the early 70s. We communicate on a regular basis. We even eat a monthly luncheon, so we stay in contact. I've got another group of some guys who played in the late 70s and into the early 80s under Robin Roberts, who I know we'll talk about in just a minute. So we get together with that group. Then I've got a group of former coaches, couple coaches and administrators from the 70s and 80s. And we've got a little group that we stay in contact with. So I remain busy. Retirement is great. Trust me, you'll have a chance to do that someday. But it's a happy life. And thanks for asking.
Awesome. Glad to hear that. Really glad to hear that. Well, you know, thinking back to, you know, your career at USF, you know, I was curious, you know, USF was obviously a pretty new program at the time. The history of USF baseball starting in 1966. You were on the 1972 and 73 teams. You know, how did you end up at USF? Are you, what area are you originally from? And how did you kind of find out about the program?
Well, I graduated from Dunning High School,
okay,
just down the street from where I live now, and got a scholarship to play at St. Pete Junior College. So I played there 2 years and then had the opportunity to come over to USF after, for my last 2 years of eligibility. And again, as you indicated, 1971, interesting thing, when I played, if you can now imagine, everybody knows the stadium as it exists currently, the baseball stadium. When I played, home plate was in what is now the left field corner. So if you picture that, when we hit a foul ball out over the first base dugout, again, coming back toward what is now home plate, that ball ended up in a sand pasture, which is now the Sun Dome, or which now the Yingling Center.
Interesting.
So the baseball field was a little bit different back then. And as you indicated, baseball starting in 1966, and of course, Beefy Wright was the architect, the first head coach of the program. And interesting, obviously, he had to start from grassroots back in 66 to take it into when I came in 71. Interesting story is that when he first started, the university administration only allowed him to schedule games on weekends. So that naturally led to a limited baseball schedule.
Yeah.
But he went through those growing years of getting a little bit of scholarship money and taking it into when I came. And then, of course, my senior year was the 72-73 year, which we ended up having the best record up to that point. And nice. I'm going to throw out a number. I don't know how accurate it is. I'm going to say we were something like maybe 24-16 or 18, something like that.
Yeah.
But it really was the best record at the time. But it was those early days when you think about USF baseball kicking off in the infant stages was a lot of fun and a lot of growing pains, as you can surmise, with only being able to play games on weekends in the early stages, but then naturally moving into what we call the university, which is university classification in our senior year, which would now be designated as Division I baseball. Okay. But back then it was called the university division. But a lot of growing pains, but it was just wonderful to be a part of those early years.
Definitely. Yeah. Just to be with a program when it's really just trying to launch, that's a pretty cool experience. Thinking about, you know, your playing career, what are maybe some memories that stand out, some maybe stories you have from that time, or even if you wanted to share, you know, what it was like going on a road trip back then. I mean, nowadays you have teams that are, you know, flying via airplane to different, you know, locations. Just to talk maybe a little more about your playing days.
One of the highlights of going into my senior year, and this is going to sound a little bit funny, the old uniforms that we used to wear were the old cotton, almost wool uniform. And at that time, we got a new set of uniforms that Beefy purchased for us for our senior year. The polyester, the new uniforms that were coming in. Remember the old Pittsburgh Pirate uniform where you didn't have a belt?
Yeah.
You had the elastic waistline.
Okay.
That was a big highlight when we got brand new uniforms our senior year. We, in terms of travel, it's interesting because the year before I got there, they used to rent cars. But unfortunately, that year, they had an automobile accident. They didn't have any injuries or anything. But at that point, the university said, we need to start going more as a team. So we started to rent vans. So our travel was basically renting vans. We'd unload into two different maxi vans. If we went on a long trip like to FSU or Florida or to Miami, we did have a Greyhound bus. But travel was a little bit different than what they obviously do now.
Right. Yeah, I was just interested in that. Okay. So for road games, in your playing days, was the furthest you went was in-state? Were there any out-of-state experiences?
No, it was all in-state.
Okay.
In-state. A trip to Tallahassee for us was like a – was like a dream because it was overnight travel and of course staying in the hotel and that sort of thing. But no, out of state travel really didn't come into play for baseball until we entered the Sun Belt Conference around 1978. Okay. Then we started to do out of state travel in terms of going to Mobile, play South Al, UAB to play in Birmingham. Even Western Kentucky and Old Dominion within the Sun Belt Conference.
Gotcha. And all of that was via, well, I guess you could maybe airplane travel that some or bus? Or
that became airplane travel in terms of obviously Western Kentucky and Old Dominion.
Yeah.
We still took a bus and or vans to Mobile and or Birmingham.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
We were sort of a travel.
Yeah, you're on the road. Yeah.
Even in the 70s.
Gotcha. Very cool. Well, you know, I also wanted to ask you, you know, you played for the first ever coach in USF history, Beefy Wright. And I really couldn't find much about him on the internet. You played for him. You coached for him. Can you talk a little bit about him and like just who he was and the work that he put in for the program?
You know, all these years in dealing with alumni baseball players, I have never had a player say anything negative about playing for Beefy Wright. What a wonderful experience. His nickname, Beefy, was because he looked like an NFL defensive tackle. Big man. But again, just the most pleasant guy. Fun to play for. He let you develop. He didn't have an assistant coach, so it was a one-man operation at the time. And very, very organized. Again, limited in terms of scholarship assistance. So we were about as good as we can be. He did a lot of recruiting of junior college talent in the area. But an interesting story, after my senior year, I said to Beefy or Coach Wright, I want to go into coaching. I want to be a coach. He said, well, Jeff, then you stay with me this next year and I'll make you a graduate assistant. So that first year out, which was again the 73-74 year, he allowed me to be a graduate assistant, probably paid me a couple hundred dollars or whatever. But here I am working on my master's. I'm 22 years old. We have the fall schedule. We come into December. He calls me in the office and says, Jeff, I have just taken a job at a nearby junior high school, Greco Junior High, which is really from USF down the street on Fowler Avenue. They've got some administrative problems over there. I'm about ready to get out of coaching. So I've accepted this dean of student job at Greco. Now, this is in December. Yeah. We've got the whole spring to play baseball. So he said, Jeff, I want you to be sort of the head coach. And what I will do is I'll do two different things. I will leave in the storage room behind the dugout. I will leave the practice schedule every morning so that when you start practice at 2:30 or 3 o'clock, you'll know what to do the first hour or so, because I really won't get there until between 4 o'clock and 4:30 when Greco would let out.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we got here. I'm 22 years old. Yeah. I'm sort of the head coach now at this point, because now we start the season in February. He leaves me the starting lineup every day, but I do all the pregame stuff. I get the game going, and he would normally come in about the fourth or fifth inning.
Wow.
Funny thing or interesting thing, we had a gate, a door out on the left field fence where he would park his car out there, and then he'd come in through the gate. And he told me later that when he would step onto the field, and again, fourth, fifth inning, he would always look at the scoreboard, obviously.
Right.
And he said, depending on the score, he would decide whether he wanted to continue coming in the dugout and take charge of the team at that point. Interesting thing, we started out that season 9-0.
Wow.
Now, if you check the records of USF baseball, I had a guy on that team, and I think you met him, Joe Lomascola. Joe reminds me that that 9-0 start is still a record for a USF baseball team that long ago in terms of the starting record. So here I am, the head coach helping Beefy. He finished out that year, and then the following year, 74, 75, and 75, 76, is when we hired Jack Butterfield. Okay. And he came from Maine and really started the program in terms of a little bit more scholarship assistance and stepping and the ability to be able to step it up another level. But playing for Beefy was wonderful. Coaching with Beefy was wonderful, and just a tremendous person.
That's awesome. And yeah, you know, I was curious too about Jack Butterfield. You know, it looked like he was here for about two seasons, and I know you coached with him. Can you talk a little bit about his time at USF?
Yes, Jack was from Jack Butterfield is where I learned most of the fundamentals in terms of coaching. Again, at Maine, you know, the schools, the colleges up in the north with the weather, they start out their seasons a lot of times indoors. So when you're coaching indoors in the initial part of a baseball season, obviously there's limitations. So you work a lot on team and individual fundamentals. So Jack brought in a whole different concept to me in terms of coaching. And again, to repeat, he's the person that I probably learned the most from in those 2 years in terms of the fundamentals of coaching. Now, he left then in 76. He was hired by the New York Yankees and went on to the Yankees in their minor league organization in some administrative and so forth. And to be honest with you, Mark, he then was unfortunately killed in an automobile accident about 2 years later. If that had not happened, I think he might have ended up either being a manager of the New York Yankees or perhaps even a general manager or director of scouting, because I just know that George Steinbrenner at that time just loved Jack Butterfield.
Wow, that is really interesting. I did not know that, but wow, interesting to hear about the short but very impactful time he had at USF and based on baseball in general. Wow, very.
I remember the fall of 1976, August, just about ready for school to start, ready to start fall practice. I got a phone call to come in and see Jack Butterfield. And this was on a Saturday in August. I went in and sat down and Coach Butterfield said, Jeff, I've just taken a job with the Yankees. I've given my 1 week or 2 week notice. So I need to have you be the head coach this fall until USF puts the job situation together to hire the next coach.
Wow.
So I actually became the head coach then in the fall of 76, directing tryouts and running the team until then, as we get into the third coach in USF history,
yeah.
Robin Roberts then was hired in January of 1977. So really the fall of 76, I also had a little stint of being the head coach again.
Wow. Interesting. That's really cool. Interesting. And then
so you talk about learning on the job, right?
Yeah. Sounds like it for sure. And thinking about, you know, Robin Roberts coming to USF, you know, how did that happen? I mean, he was a Major League Baseball Hall of Fame player. I don't know what his experiences were after playing. Was he doing like other coaching and then just ended up at USF as a coach, or was coming to USF like his first time as a coach? Just kind of curious about how he came to USF.
When he got out of Major League Baseball, he went into the finance business.
Oh.
And he did that, I want to say, for the next 10 years. But he had his sons were playing baseball in a high school there in Philly. And he'd go over and help a little bit, and it wasn't even in an official capacity, but he always had in the back of his mind that he'd like to be a coach. Well, at that time, Bobby Richardson, the second baseman from the New York Yankees, a name very familiar to baseball people, Bobby Richardson was the head coach at South Carolina back then. Robin had some conversations with Bobby. And Bobby said, you know, Robin, you ought to think about getting into college baseball. Well, lo and behold, it becomes the fall of 77. And Bobby actually tells him, I hear that there's a position down at the University of South Florida. And long story short, Robin throws his name into the hat there in December. And it's an interesting story with that, too. I remember we played a fall schedule. So, again, I'm sort of like the acting head coach, whatever you want to call me. We're playing a fall schedule. And I remember that we played an away game over at Hillsborough Community College, over at Redsland, which is the now called the Yankee Complex. We had a game over there. So we come back to the campus. And I remember the field was very, very dry. Okay. So I put the sprinkler on. We had a sprinkler, a Whirligig sprinkler that you'd hook in right behind the mound, and it would do the infield and a little bit of the dirt infield. Well, long story short, I had put it in before we went over to Hillsborough Community College. When I came back, I forgot to go back out to the field and turn it off. So I go the next morning, and the groundskeeper is a little bit upset with me because the infield is now underwater. Well, I said, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. So I go out that afternoon and it's muddy and I'm sweeping off and blah, blah, blah. And I'm in a mud up to my ankles. Well, I get a notice. A student comes out and says, Jeff, at the athletic director, Dick Bowers wants you to come into the office. Well, you know, I'm dirty. I've been out there sweating, sweeping mud, blah, blah, blah. So I go and I have no idea why. So I changed my shoes, luckily, same outfit I've got on, shorts and a t-shirt. I go into his office. There sitting is Robin Roberts. Dr. Bauer said, Jeff, I want to introduce you to Robin Roberts. It looks like he's going to be our next head coach. Wow. And so what a way to meet the new head coach. Here I am. And I said, guys, I apologize. I've been working on the field for 2 or 3 hours. But it was a great experience meeting Robin. The one thing about Robin Roberts, and I heard it so many times after he passed away, was that not only was he obviously a tremendous baseball player, baseball pitcher, Hall of Fame, but beyond that, he was a nicer person. And that is the greatest description of Robin Roberts. You know, in this day and age of Major League Baseball, when you hear about the pitch count and starters going 5 or 6 innings, and then you got your middle relievers and your closers, Robin Roberts, at one time during his career, pitched 28 straight starts where he went the entire game. Now, he didn't win them all, but 28 straight complete games. You talking about a workhorse? You talking about a guy that was blessed with a major league arm? That was Robin Roberts. But again, great pitcher, Hall of Fame, but even a nicer person.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, I've always been curious, you know, what it was like when he came to USF. And, you know, it's interesting too, like, you know, that was really his first head coaching job, and obviously seems like he had the right background. I mean, he was a Hall of Fame player. He was a good character person, but what made him, because his teams were good, and it all really kind of culminated with making the first ever NCAA tournament for USF baseball. And I think that was your last year on staff as well. You know, what made him a good coach? What made him effective to get teams out there and recruiting and winning games?
You know, the interesting thing, he brought a professional baseball mentality to college baseball. And when I say that, it's interesting because I've had so many players from his era that have come back to me and said, Jeff, I really didn't appreciate the simplistic part of baseball that he made it. Now I understand. He, you know, baseball is a fairly simple game. Robin always said, in order to play Major League Baseball, it's about the fastball. And I'd say, what? He'd say, you've got to hit it and you've got to be able to pitch it. Baseball can be a simple game, but it's also a very emotional and frustrating game. As you know, Mark, it's a game where if you hit 300, you failed 7 times. It's a game of failure when you think about it. It's living with those 7 at-bats where you failed. You get 3 hits, you hit 300, you're a hero, but it's that daily grind of living with failure. And Robin tried to bring that mentality to college baseball. Now, at times, some players understood it. Some players thought that maybe he was going to bring a magic wand and he'd wave it and suddenly you'd become a professional baseball prospect. Well, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. And I remember he would tell the pitchers, you know, if you go 0-2, you know, a lot of times you talk about, why, if you're 0-2, what's the next pitch? You nibble here, you nibble there. Well, that wasn't his philosophy. He'd say, pitchers, if you're 0-2, now go to 0-3. It's that simplistic part of baseball that was so refreshing. And again, he only had 3 scholarships to work with. Tried to raise money, tried to bring the program to another level, which he did. Now, all during this time, I'm a part-time coach. We don't have the money to hire me full-time yet. So when I first started, again, back in 73, all the way up to 1981, I was a part-time coach. I mentioned Greco Junior High, where Beefy Wright went. Well, Beefy Wright got me a job over there teaching physical education and coaching. So I would go over there at 7 a.m. in the morning. We were on double sessions, and I coached or I taught over there. I coached football over there, coached girls basketball over there. We'd get out about noon. I would coach, and then I'd run over to South Florida at 2 or 3 in the afternoon to coach. That went all the way up to 1981. And Robin finally said, Jeff, we've got to get you full time. Well, interesting. I know that in your interview with Coach Hannes, he's got 4 or 5 assistant coaches, and that's where college baseball is at the moment. And that player development is so important. But back then, you can imagine with just one assistant coach, the limitations that are involved. So luckily, he went in front of the student council at USF and begged them to put together a package to allow him to have an assistant coach, because he had already been coaching there, 6 years? Right. And it was just frustrating for him when we'd play Florida and Florida State and some other teams in the Sun Belt Conference when they'd have staffs of 2 or 3 assistants, and he doesn't really have a full-time person. Well, fortunately for me, this was in 1981. The students agreed with him. They put together a package. So I became the first full-time head coach in that 81-82 year, which you alluded to. That was the year that we really put everything together and, had the first regular season championship. Yep. Beat South Alabama. We won the tournament. We then got to the NCAA tournament for the first time in the history of the program. And as you've indicated, we ended up with a 45-13 record, and it just all blossomed from there. But I was lucky to come on full boat for having a great baseball team already ready to go.
Yeah, so that's awesome. And 45-13, that's an amazing record. Winning the conference, making the first ever NCAA tournament. What was good about that team? Like, why were they such a good team?
We had a couple junior college kids that became seniors. We had a young man named Randy Wilson, which was our third baseman and pitcher. We had Coach Roberts' son, Jimmy Roberts, was our first baseman. We had Kenny Erickson. Now, that name is familiar to USF athletic people, because obviously he's the longtime softball coach. He was an outfielder on that team. We just had the blend of some freshmen that came in, some junior college players that had been with us the year before, and just everything clicked. That also was the year that George Steinbrenner funded the lights. So we played the New York Yankees in an exhibition game, which was the game that raised the money for some scholarships, but not for baseball, but for it was a program that was developed in the city of Tampa for the families of firemen and policemen who lost their lives in the line of duty. And we raised scholarship money for that program. But beyond that, George Steinbrenner funded the lights. So by playing the Yankees, that was sort of the highlight in the middle part of that season. Yeah. But the interesting thing was, when we went to the NCAA tournament, we went down to Miami, we beat Florida in the first game, and then we lost to the Hurricanes. Now, that Miami team, back then they didn't have the Super Regional. When you won the regional, you went straight to Omaha.
Wow.
Well, Miami won the tournament. We lost to Miami that night. And then the next day, we wanted to get back to play Miami, but we lost to we lost to Stetson,
okay,
a team that we had already beaten 4 times during the year. But it's one of those things with baseball.
Yep.
Made a couple errors and blah, blah. But Miami went on to Omaha that year, and actually that was the first year they won the NCAA championship.
Wow.
So we didn't lose to Chop Liver.
No.
We lost to the team that was the eventual champs. Interesting story.
No, that is. I didn't know that. Very interesting. And I also wanted to kind of transition to your post-playing days, working with USF as an associate athletic director, and even having that stint there where there was no athletic director and you were the interim head athletic director in 1985 and in 1986. Can you talk about a little bit about that time of your career working for USF? Obviously, there was a lot of development of USF athletics, and there was even a time where that was even in question if it would continue.
Yeah, it was. We brought up that 81-82 year where we had the real success in baseball. That following fall, we hired a new athletic director, a gentleman by the name of John Wattis, because Dick Bowers moved over to it. He retired from athletic director administration, and he went over to another part of campus, so that opened up that job. So it was 1983, and Robin calls me in late in the fall. I'm again starting my second year as a full-time baseball assistant. And he said, Jeff, John Wattis has the chance to hire three assistant athletic directors. Now, this is a first too, because I think Dick Bowers may have had one assistant athletic director during the time that he was there. Well, suddenly money was coming into the program. So Robin said, Jeff, I think you ought to really consider moving into an assistant athletic director job. And, you know, I said, Coach, I really want to coach. But he said, you know, this is an opportunity you may not get. So he twisted my arm a little bit, and I met with John Wattis, and he did hire me to come on as one of the three assistant athletic directors at that time. The other one was Hiram Green, who was an ex-basketball player, and then another young lady, Barbara Sparks McGlinchey, who was actually an athletic assistant athletic director in charge of business. So we rode along those first two or three years as an assistant AD, and very interesting experience, because now I'm apart from the coaching, obviously. Now I'm working with coaches. Now I'm working with the NCAA regulations. And it was an experience. And all of a sudden now we get to about 1985. And interesting story, it's May of 1985. It's actually Memorial Day weekend of 1985. And the reason I remember this is my youngest daughter, my youngest child, was born on May the 30th. So that's over Memorial Day weekend. And, you know, you had the three-day weekend, and I was doing a lot of this stuff, getting home from the hospital and blah, blah, blah. And I go in the office on Tuesday. And there's a note sitting on my desk that I need to call the vice president of student affairs, which was a gentleman by the name of Dan Walbold, Dr. Dan Walbold. Give him a call. Well, I gave him a call, and he said, Jeff, we've just had a situation where John Wattis has been released, and I want you to come over and talk to you about the next step. Well, I went over and met with Dan Walbold, and he explained to me that, you know, the best option for the department at the time was to go the interim athletic director route, and would I be interested in doing that? I said, let me find out a little bit more of what our problem is, because I had an idea. There was talk about some budget problems and blah, blah, blah. So I went back and I met with Barbara, again, Barbara Sparks McGlinchey, who's our business person. And she went over all the numbers with me, and I came to the realization, and the university already knew it, we were $400,000 in debt. Now, why? Just in a very quick answer, what had happened the year before is we had based the athletic budget on projected basketball revenue. Well, we didn't get the projected basketball revenue. So actually our coaches are spending money. That's their budget that they've been given. And they're spending money that we really didn't then get by the end of that year. So we make a change. Barbara, we go over all the numbers. So I go back to Dan Walbold the next day. And now I'm meeting with Dan Walbold and the president, John Lott Brown. And I sat down with those two guys, and I I explained what the problem was, and I said, I really don't want to accept the position. We've got some problems. We've really got some fun. Now, $400,000 doesn't sound a lot, but in 1985 dollars, yeah. You probably could now say it's maybe a couple million.
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyways, it's the first time the university really faced that, where an athletic department was that much in debt. So I remember they took my answer and they said, well, Jeff, continue to think about it. So now this is about Wednesday, and I don't want to bore you, but I'll make it real quick. I remember on Friday, I was speaking to a student group on campus. It was one of those student orientation where the freshmen come in with their parents and athletic speaks and all the different areas of the university puts on a little show. So I'm over there speaking and I go back to my seat and somebody taps me on the shoulder and it's a student and she has something in her hand. She says, Dr. Brown wants you to come to the office, the president's office, Dr. Lott, John Lott Brown. So I go over to the office and John Lott Brown used to do this thing where his secretary would tell the university that he was taking a day off. But what he would do, he'd sneak into his office, close the door. He'd be in jeans and a casual shirt, but he can get all his paperwork done. Because the university thinks he's out of the office. They think he's on vacation. So I walk in, and I remember this distinctively. The lights are sort of low, and I walk in, and it's just he and I. He says, Jeff, sit down, please. And he says, I've gone over everything with everybody and blah, blah, blah. I really want you to be our acting athletic director for the year. Now, here I am. I'm probably, 35 years old, something like that. I've been an assistant AD for 4 years. How can I say no to the president? And so I said, yes, I'll do it. And long story short, I was named to that position in June. There's one quick story that I don't think I've ever told very many people, but I think the statute of limitation is probably good so that I can confess. During that month of June, and again, then Barbara and I would sit down. We realized what we needed to do. We needed to cut here. We needed to cut there. One thing we needed to do was the coaches, in each case, we needed to cut a scholarship from each sport. Didn't sound like a lot, but you know, for a coach to lose a scholarship, that's tough. That's tough. And that's for the next year, because June, they've already signed their athletes for this coming year. But for their recruiting for the upcoming year, the 85, 86 year, they're going to have less scholarship money to work with. Well, with that being said, I knew it was going to be a tough meeting where I had to sit in front of the coaches and tell them that not only you might need to face some budget cuts in your expenses, but you might also need to have a scholarship reduction. Well, with that being said, when they hired me in June, the president said, now, Jeff, what we're going to do, we'll give you an increase of $10,000 in your salary. Doesn't sound like a lot of money, but again, you're talking 1985. And $10,000 to somebody like myself, you know, that's a lot of money. And I looked him in the eye and I said, Dr. Brown, no. I will not take the $10,000 because I know in another week or two, I need to sit in front of coaches and I need to tell them that I'm cutting their budgets and I can't do it knowing that you have just given me blah, blah money. Mm-hmm. And my wife wasn't real excited about it, but I will confess that later on in the year, about 6 months later, they did give me a little bit more compensation, but just one of those things where I would sit in. They'd call me over to the president cabinet meeting and I'd be sitting there with all the vice presidents. And again, talking about athletics and talking about this and talking about how we're making cuts and so forth. And I remember one of the vice presidents in one of those meetings said, you know, if we can't get this thing resolved, we're going to need to either drop sports or we might just drop the entire USF athletic program. That's how dire it was at that time. But with the help of John Lott Brown, with the help of Dan Walbold, with the help of Barbara Sparks McGlinchey and other administrative staff, Hiram Green, we were able to, little by little, as that academic year progressed, we made the cuts, we lived with it, we swallowed our pride in some cases, and then we move into the spring of 86, and that's when we hire Paul Griffin and things rebound from there. But it was tough times. And I didn't have a lot of experience, and especially being an athletic director. And the one thing I did learn about being an athletic director is that picture a triangle where you've got coaches in one corner, you've got the university administration in the other part of the triangle, and then you have your fans and your boosters in the other part. You're in the middle. Every decision that an athletic director or an athletic administrator makes, one of those three factions are going to be upset.
Right.
And I learned that, and I realized, you know, I'm not sure I really want to be an athletic director, but it was a great experience. I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't trade it for anything. But, you know, they say that in life that sometimes you grow during your toughest years. And I think that that's true, because that was a tough year.
Wow.
But things fell into place. We got support, we got help, and it worked out. And then Paul Griffin came in and just did a marvelous job of increasing some revenues and blah blah, and it worked out.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And as a current day USF fan, obviously a big thanks to you and the team back then keeping the operation afloat to see brighter days. And that kind of, leads me to one of my last points here is, you know, when you look at where we are now in 2024, it's a pretty exciting time for USF athletics. We're going to be breaking ground on an on-campus stadium pretty soon. The rest of the facilities are nice. Obviously, baseball field was, you know, renovated and built kind of in the early 2010s. Yingling Center has been renovated. So now as you look at it today, during those times when you were working at USF, did you ever envision it would get this big? And now that it is, and it's only trending up, how does that feel? What does that mean to you to see it like this now?
You know, the best example that I can give is it's like being a parent. You have a newborn, and you watch the newborn all the way through the toddler stages, the baby stages, and the growth, and the elementary school, and on it. That's what I've seen with USF, with athletics. I've seen the baby, the infant, the growing pains, the elementary school, the middle school problems, moving on. And yet when you see what's come to fruition, and you see the development, and when football was brought on board around 1990, 1991, something like that. When I left in 1989, Paul Griffin, and I think that this is correct, Paul Griffin was able to take some of my salary and put it together, and that's when he hired Leroy Salmon. And that was a tremendous hire, because Leroy Salmon is Leroy Salmon. And he was able to come in and start to the fundraising, to the development of football and all the way through. So when you look at where we are today and you look at the facilities and just what you indicated, what a time to springboard on into the future. Now, there's a lot of talk about perhaps being able to move into what they call the Power Five conferences, and maybe that's going to be down the road. And I know that Mike Kelly works very hard with that on a daily basis. And you just see that development. But again, it's like a parent who's seen the baby grow all the way up. And it's a really blessing to have been a small part of it. Now, before I go, Mark, I've got to ask you a couple quick trivia questions about USF history. Okay. Now, you're probably not going to know, but they are a little bit of fun facts.
Okay.
The first USF player to sign an NFL contract. Ooh. Have any idea? This is sort of a trick question.
I don't.
This is one of my favorite trivia questions about USF history. That person was actually a basketball player back in 1974, Arthur Jones. Big, strong forward. Also, he had played high school football. The Kansas City Chiefs had him come to training camp. So he actually is the first USF player to sign an NFL contract. We opened up the Sundome in 1980. Of course, Lee Rose came down from Purdue. He had just taken a Purdue team to the Final Four.
He comes
into USF. We open up the Sundome. The very first game in the Sundome was against Florida A&M. But the second game was against a highly touted national power who we really designated this is going to be the inaugural opening of the Sundome. The first game was sort of a preview, right?
Yeah.
That team came in. It was the first road game for a very famous national college basketball coach. Any idea? I'll give you a hint in just a second, but any idea?
It was his first road game.
That was his first road game. We were
as a head coach.
Okay. We played, now I'll give you a hint, we played Duke.
Coach K?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Can you believe that was Coach K's first road game?
Wow.
Sort of interesting. The first official USF football game was against
Western Kentucky?
Kentucky Wesleyan.
Kentucky. All right.
We scored 83 points. The reason I know that is I was working the sideline, and it was a fun night to watch
awesome.
A USF football team come out of the smoke that they had in the run.
Yeah. That's awesome.
First USF baseball player to make All-American was actually my teammate back in 73, Mike Campbell.
Wow.
Second baseman from Brandon High School. He went to a junior college, transferred, and actually hit around 400 that year. But the first actual USF baseball All-American. Another interesting, the first official USF basketball game, who did we play? Now, this was actually in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
The first USF basketball.
I'm gonna guess a Florida team, maybe maybe Florida State, maybe.
No, actually, it was against Stetson.
Oh,
and
okay.
We actually won by 1 point, 74-73. It was at Stetson, like I said.
Oh, wow.
And I remember Jack Harris, the radio announcer. The game was actually on the radio. I remember him saying when the game was over, oh, there's a bunch of USF students that are down on the floor and they're all running around saying, we're number one. We're number one.
That's awesome.
And I'll close with just one more. This is an interesting question. We've only had one USF student athlete that has scored a touchdown and also hit a home run. Now, this is interesting.
Oh, that's a good one. Well, it has to be from the 90s onwards, obviously.
Yes, and he was a fullback on the football team, also played for Eddie Cartieri with the baseball team. His name is Otis Dixon.
Huh.
He's actually now coaching at Clearwater High School. He's a football coach, assistant coach, offensive coordinator. So USF has a lot of history.
Yeah.
A lot of history. And, you know, like we said, when you go back to 1966 – that's almost 60 years ago of USF athletics. Interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's funny. You're mentioning watching a kid grow up, the athletic program. And I think one of your kids actually worked for USF for a little bit.
My son had the opportunity to be a graduate assistant coach under Jim Leavitt.
Oh, nice.
He did it for, I want to say, 3 years. Wonderful experience. In fact, he was a part of that coaching staff, the infamous USF team that got to upset Auburn on the road.
Oh, yeah.
And came out as the number two team in the nation.
Yeah.
The whole town of Tampa, the whole University of South Florida campus exploded.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, 4 days later, we played a night game at Rutgers on TV, and just anything that went wrong in that game. And but he was a part of that coaching staff those couple years, and just a wonderful experience. Wonderful experience. And I'll close with this. It was interesting. At the old Tampa Stadium is where they were playing at the time. Raymond James. And after a home game, Jim Leavitt was very, very nice. He got on the bus. He would ride the buses back to the campus, which allowed the coaching staff to come out in the parking lot. And we had this one little corner of the parking lot where we set up chairs and food and obviously a lot of refreshments. And it was so much fun sitting with those coaches after a game, people like Wally Burnham, Double R, that's his nickname. He was a defensive coach. But those coaches after a college football game where they have been through 5 days of just endless film watching and practice and blah, 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 to sit with them when the game was over and to listen to them just relax, I'll never forget. But that let my son have great coaching experiences. He's over here at Countryside High School now. He was a head football coach over there for 4 years, had a couple pretty good teams. But then he and his wife started to have babies. And so now he got out of high school football coaching. He's now the girls' golf coach over there. But he's been over there about 12 years, teaches social studies. But he did. USF has a lot of memories for me.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thank you. No.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm really, really glad you were able to join and share, you know, your experiences at USF, and a lot of great stories. And I know that our audience is going to enjoy hearing this. So I really, really, really appreciate it, Jeff.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you so much. And thank you again for all you do.
Thank you. Thank you. All right.